actually just was at a conference yesterday and the day before that Michelle Obama spoke at. And, you know, the fact that there has been a tripling of childhood obesity in the last 3 decades, you know, this is something that ought to be a wake-up call for anybody who cares anything about the health and future of this country.
Well, that's my guest today. That's Jeff Miller. He's the president CEO of the Washington, D.C.-based Alliance for Biking and Walking. And as you've heard me say so many times, pedestrians and cyclists have a lot in common. We're both tormented by the automobile. And we're going to get into that. Jeff's going to tell us all about the Alliance, the issues they address. And that's today's show. I'm your host, Frank Peters, and you're listening to CDM Cyclist. Thanks for tuning in once again. And a special thank you if you've clicked on over from Corona Del Mar Today. Of course, Corona Del Mar Today, I do a weekly column there on cycling safety. And I knew that I wanted to post up this interview with Jeff. Jeff and I met, as we'll touch on later, at the recent California Bike Summit. Jeff kicked off the session downtown LA and electrified the audience. You're going to get a big kick out of listening to Jeff Miller on today's show. Well, first, may I say thank you to my sponsor. It's the holidays. It's time for a little giving. If you have somebody on your holiday list needs a bicycle gift, why don't you consider biketiresdirect.com? You don't have to buy new tires. They have clothing, gear, helmets, lights, you name it. You can find it at biketiresdirect.com. Check them out, please. Well, Jeff has a lot to say this morning, so let's get right to it.
And you were the kickoff speaker. How did you earn such a privileged slot in the lineup, Jeff?
I would have to say it's all connections.
It's who you know, right?
Yeah. So Dave Snyder, of course, is executive director of the California Bicycle Coalition. And Dave had invited me, I think, back in the spring. And it was one of those things where, like, sure, let's check in a little later. And I think I actually had come around to declining in September just because of workload. And I think there was another training that was planned. That was conflicting. That got rescheduled, and I had just come off the New England Bike and Walk Summit and had such a fantastic time there talking with folks that we just sort of put out a general invitation to folks again. And then, of course, seeing that the California Summit was on the schedule, I checked in with Dave again and said, "Hey, I'd be very happy to come out if you'll still have me." And that was only about 5 or 6 weeks in advance. So it was particularly nice that he did.
That's good. Now, I could tell you are quite the accomplished PowerPoint presenter, huh? You had some pretty slick slides, Jeff. You've been at it a while, huh?
Yeah.
You know your story.
And you know, there are certainly some that I've drawn from friends and folks who've inspired me. And so, in going to enough conferences, I get my dose of PowerPoints elsewhere. Yeah. What works, what doesn't. But I have no speaking notes when I do a presentation. The PowerPoint are my notes. There's the visual cues for me. I do have a few notes written into the PowerPoint, but actually, when I had so many people ask me for the presentation, I had to go back in and add in the notes to help explain some of the pieces that I knew, but someone else wouldn't have a clue as to why does it say, you know, 14 up there.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Well, that's often a good way to prepare a presentation. That way I always tell people looking for presentation advice, your audience has to listen to you. They can't read the slides and make sense of them.
I've seen plenty of dreadful shows years,
right.
And so I try to keep as few words up there as possible. There's a couple spots, but I mean, it has to be, you know, something where people aren't literally reading more than a sentence or two. And so I do like to use pictures and graphics and so forth.
So. Right. So Jeff, let's go to your PowerPoint slides. I have one of them memorized, and I may remember it differently than you actually presented it, but I remember you had several slides, a series, with maps of the lower 48,
mm-hmm.
right? And then different statistics about, like, infrastructure for biking and walking, pedestrians yeah. and cyclists.
So a lot of those graphics I was sharing from the Alliance's benchmarking report. Mm-hmm. The Alliance, with support from the Centers for Disease Control, publishes biking and walking in the United States, a benchmarking report. The 2010 report is currently available. The 2012 report is coming out in about a month. So was giving folks a little bit of a sneak peek on that. And we have a number mm-hmm. Of graphics, and particularly the ones you're highlighting with the maps, we've got heat maps that show levels of biking and walking to work, for instance, risk by state and so forth. So it really does give a very interesting visual representation of where there are challenges in our country, and to be able to see the inverse of, you know, states where there are higher levels of biking and walking and the risks are much lower, and where you do sort of ponder those questions of, you know, are people biking less because it is so risky, or is it so risky because, you know, there are so few people bicycling that drivers aren't expecting to see them out on the road, for instance.
Right, right. I like the term heat maps, because they do. They get, like, warm, redder, darker, until, like, they're, you know, black.
Hot or cold, yeah.
Hot or cold, yes. And for me, the punchline was, you led us through a series of those, and then you put the two maps up side by side, like, you know, biking and walking by state, and then obesity. And
yeah,
the correlations just were like a slap in the face. It was so, it mapped 100%, I'd say.
Yeah.
99%, yeah.
Well, I think one of the other ones, too, which I shared, and certainly a number of people in the audience had seen before, and it's still it's still shocking to see, you know, even when I share it at health conferences where nearly everyone has seen the maps, but the heat maps from the Centers for Disease Control showing the levels of obesity in each state and tracking that data. I think I shared from like 1990 forward, and it's absolutely frightening to see in the last couple of decades. I actually just was at a conference yesterday and the day before that Michelle Obama spoke at, and you know, the fact that there has been a tripling of childhood obesity in the last three decades. You know, this is something that ought to be a wake-up call for anybody who cares anything about the health and future of this country. We obviously know that there's a looming health crisis in the costs of healthcare and lost productivity and so forth. But even things like the reports from the military, their report, yeah. too fat to fight, and showing how nearly a third of recruits are ineligible to enter any of the armed forces because of their obesity.
Oh, geez. I didn't know that too. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you use the term wake-up call, and it seems to me sometimes, Jeff, that people are slow to wake up to that. Why is that? Do you observe that, too, that there's it's like the bad news we don't want to admit to, or we don't know, we don't have a pill we can take, or there's no easy answers, or are we...
Well, there's a couple of things. I mean, I think on some level, I mean, I would say that that's part of the challenge and the fun of being an advocate is we're trying to change things. We see a better way that the world ought to be. And I'd say for all of us who are bicycle and pedestrian advocates, we know that biking and walking can solve so many of the problems that our communities, our states, our nation, our world faces. You know, from health to environmental to economic development to societal issues. And so, I mean, having been someone who's like got it and been an advocate for biking and walking for 20 years now, it is frustrating that
people
are not getting it as quickly as they should. At the same time, you know, over the last couple of decades, so many more people who do get it, so many bright lights out there, and as a group of people, advocates and organizations, we've made massive strides, and you know, seeing literally hundreds of millions of dollars being spent to improve bicycling and walking conditions are all very encouraging. I think what does get me depressed, and I wish we'd had more wake-up calls about, are we're still spending the majority of our dollars and many of our decisions still making the wrong decisions. We're still building more highways. We're still sprawling in the development of our communities. So, you know, it is very frustrating at times.
Right.
And at the same time, I think it's the size of the issue can be so overwhelming for people. You know, I think that any one of us as individuals or any citizen who looks at a busy roadway that's got 6 or 8 lanes of traffic and thinks, God, how could I possibly cross this safely as a pedestrian? Or why on earth would I ever bicycle on that road? There's just a lot of, you know, having by default to throw hands up in the air. And it takes usually just a few very sort of visionary, committed people to help start turning that trend around. But the amount of infrastructure that has been built, it is a very, very daunting piece. And then there's the daily decisions.
How do I get to work?
Yeah. And I would say that both the challenge and where there is so much hope is in those personal decisions that each of us make. Every day, you know, thinking about every trip that you're making and asking yourself, do I need to drive there? Can I walk or bike there? How can I make it so it is easier for me to bicycle and walk to destinations? I mean, we know that a full 50% of trips in this country are 3 miles or shorter.
Right.
And 25% of trips are 1 mile or less. So clearly a quarter of trips could be walkable trips, and over half could be bikeable trips.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But obviously the types of conditions that people are facing, biking and walking, you know, can be very, very daunting.
I was in Ottawa the past 3 days for a financial conference, Jeff. And while I was there, people know I've organized bike rides for some of these financial events. So everybody was asking me, you know, had I been out on a bike, but the, you know, 30 degree temperatures in the rain, I found too intimidating. But I could look out the window of the convention center and see lots of Ottawans on their bicycles, you know, pedaling right through that. It was encouraging. A great mm-hmm. infrastructure, lots of bike racks. And even though they didn't have, let's say, the, you know, compared to California, the greatest climate. Then I get in the airplane and fly home and have to change planes in Chicago. And as you're coming into the airport, all you can see are freeways jammed with traffic at rush hour, and you're just thinking about, wow, what the size and scope of this issue we're talking about is so large.
Yeah.
It's going to take more than just higher gas prices, I guess, huh? We need something to give this a boost.
There are a couple of things that are going to help precipitate very rapid changes, and mm-hmm. A dramatic increase in gas prices we know will have such an effect, just out of economic necessity. I mean, that is one of the things that is encouraging to me, you know, knowing how challenging and painful a sharp increase in gas prices can be. You know, I don't wish that pain on anyone, but it is an exciting opportunity for people to self-evaluate, do I need to drive everywhere I'm driving? Is it possible for me to bike and walk or carpool or use transit in certain situations? And so, I mean, you know, we've gotten accustomed to $3.50 or $4 gallon gasoline. And so it doesn't seem to have as much an impact right now, but we are still seeing, you know, record numbers of people bike commuting.
Right. And, yeah, and so that's good. We've got to focus on the positive. It makes me think of the boil of frog analogy, though, gas prices, right? And you know that analogy, right? If you throw a frog into a pot of boiling water, he jumps right out. But if you turn up the gas slowly, he won't.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the way we are with gas prices.
Yeah. There's been a couple of things, you know, where it's spiked and the water's gotten really hot really quick and some people have jumped out.
Yeah.
But it is amazing and it is frustrating how many people continue to just sort of hang out in the pot.
Yeah, it is. One of the great one-liners at the California Bike Summit that comes to mind now, somebody said that California has to live up to its potential. And that says a lot, doesn't it? What does that mean to you, Jeff, California living up to its potential?
I think that may have been Randy Neufeld who said that on his closing speech. I mean, you know, I think that what it means to me is, you know, California as the largest state, certainly one of, if not the most progressive states in the country, a state who has led by example time and time again, and the fact that California has so many things going so well for it from a standpoint of the vast majority of the state being a climate, quite literally, you know, the weather is so
conducive,
appropriate for biking,
conducive
to biking and walking much of the year. But, you know, one of the things which I learned many years ago as a recent college graduate, I was very fortunate to be able to bicycle around the world, studying bike policy and infrastructure and so forth in over a dozen countries around the globe. And, you know, you give the example of Ottawa. I mean, Ottawa has higher levels of biking and walking than many cities in California, despite a much tougher climate.
I was invited to come back in January if I wanted to, you know, see some really tough
weather. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you will see people bicycling in Ottawa in January. You know, I mean, as someone who has lived in Maine most of my life and bike commuted year round, I can tell you it's as simple as skiing. I mean, it's just a matter of having the right clothing. It's the right gear. And you know, you layer up and, you know, there's a bit of mental hardiness that goes with it. Like, okay, my cheeks are going to burn for the next 20 minutes. I might lose feeling in my toes and or fingers, but, you know, I will warm up on the other end. And you do learn to muscle through with it. But one of the things I learned on that trip and saw repeated time and time again is climate, topography, economic status, you know, all these various factors that people say, oh, we could never have biking and walking at serious levels here because it's too hilly or it's too cold or, you know, whatever the reasons are. The common denominator is that when you have a government that recognizes biking and walking as a full and equal mode of transportation and provide the funding and help develop the infrastructure, people will choose it a significant amount of the time, and it will solve so many other problems. You know, you look at San Francisco, I mean, it's reputed around the world as one of the hilliest cities, you know, where people live. And the levels of biking in San Francisco are starting to rival those of Portland. And oh yeah, there's hills in Portland too. People come back from places like Holland and they're like, oh my God, it's such an amazing place to bike, but it's so flat there. And it's like, yeah, but have you ever had to bike into a headwind in Holland? I would take a hill over a Dutch headwind any freaking day.
Yeah,
because
I think so too.
Especially one of those headwinds in the winter when it's, you know, 33 degrees and blowing, you know, spray right in your face. So
yeah, that's
there are so many opportunities to be had, and I think California really does stand to shine in many regards.
Of course, for us here, some of our big challenges are California kind of built up big during the whole like sprawl movement or whatever you want to call it, right? This is where sprawl was built, invented right here. So distances without density.
It's not invented, at least perfected quite
perfected,
well.
Perfected, yes. And still going on again, right? We're still doing it today. Really? So that makes it challenging too. But yeah. We do have great potential here. And well, as I often say, it's like football. They say a game of inches. We're making progress, however slowly. It's inevitable is how I feel when I come back from a conference like the summit.
One very good trend we're seeing is the popularity of people moving back into downtowns.
Yes.
And the growth of urban centers. And obviously, almost out of necessity, if not straight on convenience, that's part of where we're seeing some of the brightest lights for more people biking and walking. We're also seeing a new generation of young people who really have very little, or certainly have less interest than any previous generations in the whole car Ponzi scheme. I mean, you know, they quite literally are like, wow, you're spending a whole lot of money and wasting time sitting in traffic. And what's fun about that? Why would I want to work, 40 or 50% of my time just to pay for a car to get to and from work? To then have to pay for parking or maintenance, or, you know, I mean, all the other expenses. I think that this generation is, you know, starting to get it and is much smarter and more savvy about things.
I see that in my own family, Jeff. My 20-year-old, he's a junior off of college, and you know, he doesn't like to necessarily sit around and listen to Dad rant about the benefits of bicycling. But I think he's done the math, and a car would just cut into his entertainment budget. And that's where he goes first, right? He's got a richer entertainment budget because he doesn't have a car.
Right.
It's simple.
And I also think that, you know, the quality of life, the sociability benefits of spending time, you know, walking or biking with friends, you know, certainly the hipster element and influence.
Right.
I mean, it's
right.
You know, it's cool to be on a bike again, and there's a whole fashion angle on it. So there are lots of good signs there, and I think, you know, I think that getting back to the larger discussion piece of, you know, there are these daunting challenges ahead, and it can seem pretty frustrating as to how much any one of us can impact things. But I think that there are a lot of personal decisions that each of us make that can have a very profound difference. I think back to the pretty major change in my life that I made just about 3 years ago, when my wife and I moved from Maine to DC.
Oh, that's a big change.
It was a very big change. I think I moved from what had been the biggest city I'd ever lived in Augusta, Maine, with a whopping population of about 18,000 to Washington, D.C. So it was a pretty big cultural shift for me. Now, I've obviously visited D.C. plenty of times. I've spent plenty of time in other cities, but to really live in one has been a very big, you know, change in lifestyle for me.
Sure,
and I've really loved it. And one of the things that I really embraced about moving to DC was that it was finally a chance to go car free. My wife and I shared a car, which I mostly drove, ironically, for my work as a bicycle and pedestrian advocate, driving all around the state of Maine for events and meetings and lobbying and so forth. And, you know, I racked up an inordinate amount of miles all in the name of active transportation, which was horribly ironic.
Yeah.
And so I was really psyched about the chance that, you know, I could finally, you know, even having, you know, a hybrid that had a massive share the road message and all that on it, that I would finally be able to live more the lifestyle that I was preaching. And I don't miss it a bit. I mean, you know, I have the occasional Zipcar rental. You know, actually, when I was out in California, in order to meet with a couple of the folks I wanted to meet with, to rent a car for about 24 hours. And it was quite the contrast, you know, from biking around downtown Los Angeles, where I was perfectly comfortable, excited to see a lot of the progress that's coming along in LA, yes. To then, you know, hopping on the freeways with five lanes going one direction, backed up in traffic, and being like, my God, people do this on a daily basis.
Every day, jeez. Yeah,
how, I mean, that's either frightening for all sorts of reasons, or it's a real testament for humans' ability to suffer.
Yes, but, exactly. Yeah.
Just, you know, once you're out of that, it's just sort of like, duh, why are we doing this to ourselves?
So liberating.
It's madness.
So these 3+ years you've been in Washington, D.C., the city itself has changed quite a bit.
Yeah, I've been able to witness a lot of that firsthand, and it is remarkable. You know, I was talking with one of my friends at the YMCA recently, and we were commenting how, you know, even just 3 years ago, when I first moved here, I mean, I was really excited because, I mean, you know, my experience in Maine, you know, in say a month, like, you know, like a winter month, you know, if I saw another bike commuter, it was like, hi, who's that? I have to meet them. They're my best friend. Right.
Right.
And here in DC, it's just so casual because you see cyclists every block. But we were talking about how even just the last couple of years, how much it's grown, so that where it wasn't unusual for you to be at a traffic light and have one or two other cyclists now. Now you can pull up to a traffic light. And this happened to me this morning when I left the Y. I pulled out at the traffic light. There were 7 other cyclists right there queued up. You know, there's wow. Probably 15 or 20 cars lined backed up. But there was a pod of cyclists that, you know, totally taking the lane. And it was, you know, it's a phenomenal thing to see. Nice. The Capital Bike Share system coming along. You know, the largest currently, for a little bit longer, the largest bike share system in the U.S., the new bike lanes on Pennsylvania Avenue, the 15th Street cycle track, in-street bike parking that's getting installed in parts all around the city. I mean, it's just and then there's the bike station, which originated
wow.
out of Long Beach in Southern California. We've got the biggest, best, biggest in the most expensive, at least, and certainly a very prominent spot right next to Union Station, inside of the Capitol building, is this amazing bike parking facility, that has, slots for 130 plus bicycles, as well as a bike rental and shop and so forth.
And it's beautiful too. It's gorgeous.
Gorgeous architectural design. Yeah.
Yes. That's terrific. So
we refer to it as the shrine for cycling.
Yes. Yes. So Jeff, you came from Augusta, Maine to Washington, D.C. Was that 2B? At the Alliance for Biking and Walking?
Yes. Yeah. So I've been involved with the Alliance since its inception in 1996, as the executive director of the Bicycle Coalition of Maine. And over about 11 and a half years, I helped grow the BCM, quite a bit from being, you know, literally an all volunteer organization. I had literally been hired, the week that the Alliance had our first, gathering and at the leadership, retreat that eventually spawned the formation of the Alliance. And over those years was able to grow the organization, have a lot of successes, you know, and everything from policy to education to funding, and then certainly, you know, some of the internal metrics of the organization. Its own membership grew from being about 100 members to about 6,500 members around the state when I left, and it's even bigger now. So, you know, this is a state of 1.3 million people, and
wow.
And so a lot of great things that I was having fun with. And when the Alliance is going through a leadership change about 4 years ago, I actually had a couple of the board members reach out to me and say, "Hey, have you thought about applying for this job?" And at first I was like, "Oh, thanks. No, I'm pretty happy here in Maine." And, you know, then on a little insistence on their part, I was like, this could be fun. I mean, the Alliance had certainly played such a huge role in my success in getting to to meet with, work with, plagiarize the fantastic successes of my peers. I also had the sort of realization that I was the oldest, if you will, longest serving executive director of any bicycle coalition at that moment in the country. And it was sort of like, oh my gosh. And well, maybe it is time for me to try to share a little more as to, you know, what I know and what I can help out others with. And I mean, I have just such a deep passion and commitment to this movement and to the really significant role that state and local organizations can and do play in this national movement, this global movement for biking and walking. Because, you know, we all know that walking and cycling ultimately are a very local activity, recreation, transportation, sport, whatever your point of connection is, it's all local. Mm-hmm. And so it's, you know, it's getting back to that sort of thinking globally, acting locally. Right. And
how about your role, Jeff, as president CEO? Where do you find yourself spending most of your time and effort? Is it conferences like the one where we met, or?
Well, certainly I do travel a fair amount, going to various conferences, meetings, summits, and the like. And you know, a lot of those, certainly I'm sharing, training, speaking, and so forth. That is an important part of my work. I mean, you know, to remind folks, to assert that local voice, to be a representative, you know, to remind partners that, you know, they need to be including, working with, and really tapping into the power of state and local organizations. It's certainly speaking directly with and to state and local leaders, trying to help them stay focused on the priorities and challenges that can, you know, make the biggest difference. I mean, I think that many of us feel very passionate about the opportunities that lie ahead, about the significant difference that we can make in making communities better, healthier, safer places to live and be. But we also feel an urgency, you know, that time is a ticking, that lots of bad decisions still are being made, that far too many lives are being lost and sacrificed. And whatever your motivations are, whether it's the economy, quality of life, or the environment, now is not to be passed off. You know, we really need to make a difference now. And so I think, you know, one of the things, aside from my earlier comment encouraging everyone to think about any time they're taking a trip, you know, whether they could bike or walk that trip instead, you know, that's such an important thing to do. It also is a fantastic role modeling thing. You know, I mean, I think back right. to my days growing up in Illinois, and, you know, I grew up in the country of downstate Illinois, and that was sort of my entry into biking and walking advocacy was as a high school graduate starting to bike to my bagging job at the grocery store where I worked. And it was 3 miles, mostly flat. And it was like this radical thing. I mean, you know, everyone's like, what? You don't drive your car here? You bike 3 whole miles? I mean, it was just like unfathomable to most people. And, you know, I look back at that now and, you know, it just totally cracks me up. I mean, it was
barely
like
get easiest, warmed up. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it was an easy 3 mile ride too, compared to what I get to do battling traffic in DC these days. But, you know, so that role modeling piece, that getting other people thinking like, oh, there are other ways we can operate here, and starting to crack that drone mold that our society seems to be stuck in, thanks to, you know, billions of dollars of advertising on the part of car companies and hundreds of billions in the infrastructure we've been building. But I think the other thing that everyone can do, and I, you know, I suspect we're probably preaching a bit here to the choir, and I'm always trying to figure out how we get out to larger audiences, but to be involved, to join and commit your time, energy, and finances to your state and local organization is also a very profound thing. I mean, I think that's one of the most exciting things for me. I mean, you know, there is so much that we can do as individuals, and we should. But there is so much more we can do when we organize. When we get together, that power that we have collectively as citizens is massive. And I've seen that time and time again where bicycle or pedestrian advocates were up against ridiculous odds and they totally ruled the day. And sometimes it's as simple as just a few phone calls or emails or letters to an elected official. Sometimes it takes thousands, tens of thousands of people marching on the street. But you know, I talked earlier about how all the variables that people use as excuses and say, oh, I can't bike or walk because of weather or topography or whatever, and how we know that it's when governments do recognize and treat biking and walking as equal. Well, the primary step to making that even happen is the advocacy. And I remember learning this lesson firsthand in Denmark. You know, here's a country where a full third of all trips are by bicycle. And this is not out of out of economic necessity. I mean, you know, the Danes are some of the wealthiest on the planet.
And happiest too, right?
And they are the happiest. and they're also some of the most beautiful people too. It's pretty odd. I mean, they're certainly some of the fittest, right? And having some of the best quality of life. And it's largely because they have very healthy, active lifestyles where biking and walking are part of their daily routines. It's not just some gym that they have to go and pound themselves on the ground about. But one of the things that was profound for me, because I think it's very easy as an American to have this perception of, oh, Europe, it's so quaint. It's always been this biking and walking society. And the fact is it hasn't always been.
Right.
You know, yes, they're older countries and they were built around a walking model and scale of development over many centuries, long before cars came on, but certainly long before bikes came along. But you know, in the 60s and 70s, they too were facing the pressures of developing around auto-oriented development. And so, you know, whether it was, you know, and the example I learned in Copenhagen was that there were protests in the streets of 100,000 cyclists demanding cycle tracks. We want safe places that we can continue to be able to bicycle. We do not want more freeways. We need and demand a safe place to ride. And so, you know, that organizing by cyclists and the continued work of the Danish Cycling Federation put those pressures on, forced the Danish government to do the right thing. Now, 30 years later, we see one of the most complete networks, some of the best education programs, literally from, you know, every kid in multiple times through their educational experience, getting proper education on how to be a safe cyclist and pedestrian, and all the various incentives for people to do the right thing. It's a phenomenal example.
And then they tax car ownership quite heavily,
yes,
too. So
they tax it quite heavily. Yeah. I mean, you know, the costs and people still are willing to put up those costs because of the conveniences that cars can provide in many situations. But they haven't let the car, which can be a very good servant, they haven't let that servant become their master. And that's unfortunately the switch that we've made in this country, is our love affair with the automobile has been so deep that we've let it take over our lives.
At the cost of our health and
yes,
our weight, and getting people to think about walking that mile to run an errand or 2 miles on the bike to go to the movies. It doesn't sound so insurmountable to get people started, willing to take a step in that direction.
Well, it's partly just giving people the option. I mean, we're not trying to force everyone onto biking and walking. I mean, you know, that was one of the slides certainly that I shared in my presentation, is this concept that there's there's a small percentage of us who are incredibly passionate and see cycling and walking as answers to all of our problems. There's a far greater percentage of people who, yeah, they get that there's benefits to biking and walking, and they'd be happy to do it, but they're not willing to put their neck on the line. They're not willing to go way out of their way, you know, driving for half an hour to get to some rail trail where they can maybe spend some time walking or biking with their family. You know, maybe they're willing to do that once in a while. But, you know, if we can make these options for people to bike and walk right out of their own door, I mean, it should be everyone's right to be able to walk out of their door and not have it be just to get into their driveway to get to their car. Yeah. I mean, you ought to be able to walk or bike from where you live to where, you know, you need to go. And whether that's just to the corner store to get some milk or to go to your kid's playground or to take the dog for a walk or to get to school or the office or to see your friends, you ought to be able to have that basic right. And we do have our work cut out for us on that.
Yeah, we do. We do. I keep thinking, though, Jeff, and it's, again, attending events where we met at the California Bike Summit. It just seems to me, when I hear the success that other people in other cities have made, that time is on our side, that
absolutely,
eventually things are going to work out. Just the price of gas is trending in our favor.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The other one I think is the health angle.
Yes.
And I think that you know, people are waking up that you know, I mean, one of the basic facts out there now is that this generation of young people is the first in the history of humankind that is expected to have a shorter lifespan than its ancestors because of the obesity and physical inactivity. We are literally letting, you know, cars kill us to the tune of tens of thousands, 30 plus thousand people per year. But the physical inactivity is so much more insidious of a problem. The estimate is that 365,000 people die every year from preventable diseases related to physical inactivity. So whether it's, you know, diabetes, heart disease, you name it. I mean, just we know that there is nothing more important that we can do for our health than to be physically active. Right. It's the best pill there is out there.
Exercise and positively correlates with reversing all of those issues.
Yeah.
Yes, right.
And unfortunately, you know, exercise has a bit of a bad rap because people think of, you know,
sweating.
I have to sweat and hard work and so
right.
forth. And I think that's where part of biking and walking are part of the simple solution, is because it can be integrated and engineered back into our daily lives. It is something that can be fun, that we can do with friends, that it can be a multitasking type trip. You know, I mean, My bike ride to work, I appreciate and realize all the other benefits it gives me. But I'm willing to bet you there's a lot of people I see every day who are biking to work because it's the quickest way to get to their place, or they don't have to pay for parking, or
yes.
or they enjoy the, you know, seeing the sunrise on their ride into work.
Absolutely.
Without, you know, seeing it through a windshield. So those factors, you know, again, are pretty important. And so, you know, getting back to that wake-up call, it's absolutely essential for the future of our society, for the well-being of future generations, that we have those options for us to all safely bike and walk.
Well, Jeff, you're an inspiration to advocates all over the country, and you electrify the audience kicking off the Bike Summit. Thank you so much for joining me on the show today.
Thank you, Frank. I appreciate it.
All right, Jeff. All right. Bye-bye. Well, we're back in the studio, and thanks so much for listening to this session with Jeff Miller from the Alliance for Biking and Walking in Washington, D.C. You know, as sometimes is the case, after the interview, we kept talking. And Jeff pulled my leg a little bit. He says, Frank, that starting off the session here, talking about PowerPoint slides, he says, I don't know if the audience will get that. So come to the website. I've got a graphic, anyway, from Jeff's presentation. He was kind enough to share it. Got a terrific graphic that shows one of those heat maps he was talking about access to bicycling and walking infrastructure and contrasted with obesity. And when you see the map, you'll get it. In the meantime, Jeff would love to hear from you. I'd love to hear from you. So why don't you come on by, leave a comment behind at cdmcyclist.com where you'll find a link. Jeff and the Alliance for Biking and Walking, they're celebrating their 15th year. It's the holidays, so they're asking, could you be so generous as to donate $15 to the cause for all the good work that they do? Well, come by the website, cdmcyclist.com. I've got a link there. What's $15? Very little. Collectively, we can make a difference. So come on by. Leave your 2 cents behind. I'd love to hear from you, too. Well, that's it for this session, CDM Cyclists. Thanks so much for listening, and good night.